You can find this podcast and others at Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. This is episode 250. How about that? 250 episodes. I still sometimes wonder how I even got to 250 episodes, but thank you very much. This episode is, the main topic about this is legal talk. And I had a chance to interview a couple of attorneys that have a pretty good organization here in Texas called Texas Law Shield. Even if you're not from Texas, you're going to get a lot out of this legal discussion that I had with them about carrying firearms and even some of the legalities that citizens need to know about what you can and cannot do about when it comes to carrying a firearm. And again, it's state specific, but there's a lot of laws in gun-friendly states that have similar laws to what we have here in Texas. So again, to my non-Texas listeners, you're going to get a lot out of this interview that's coming up. I got a couple of voicemails, however, that I want to cover. Some things that, some pretty cool. One of them is a follow-up to a recent episode and a couple of other general questions that have recently come in. So here's the first voicemail.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob. This is Jonathan from Pennsylvania. First of all, I wanted to say that I really enjoy your podcast. You're one of, if not the favorite gun podcast that I listen to, and due to your subject matter, the way you cover things, I just really enjoy it. And I had a question for you. I mean, I guess I have my opinion, but I wanted to see what your opinion is on it. And it has to do with the way children handle toy guns. You know, the four basic rules of handgun safety, or gun safety in general. One of them is obviously do not point a gun at anything you don't intend to shoot. And a lot of times the way children play with guns, you know, they're pointing them at each other, shooting. Kids, boys play cowboys and Indians, you know, type of thing years ago. And we always had the policy with our children that they're not to point a gun at somebody, for sure not anywhere, you know. Basically, they're not to point a gun at somebody, even the toy gun, when they're playing with it. Because I feel like it sets the wrong precedent for their actions later, where they might get careless because they're used to pointing a toy gun at somebody. And I just wonder what your thoughts were on that. I've never heard that discussed. I guess it's a parenting thing, but I've never heard that discussed. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. So appreciate hearing from you on that. And thanks again. And have a great day. Bye.
When it comes to toy guns, the way I was raised is pretty close to what Jonathan said in his message. I was taught you don't point guns at anybody, period, unless you want to shoot them. And not just with a toy gun. Unless, you know, basically I was told you don't point guns at people. I was also told at a very young age, you don't put your finger on the trigger. So that's pretty much. So I would say, teach your kids the four rules of gun safety. Quite some time ago, I did a podcast on kids and guns. I might redo that podcast, maybe a little bit newer version of it, because I got some more thoughts that I didn't cover in the last, or the first time I did it. But, you know, teach them the four rules of gun safety. So, just to review, Jeff Cooper's rules of gun safety. Rule number one, all guns are loaded. All guns are always loaded. Now, I like to change that a little bit. I like to put the word treat in front of that. Treat all guns as if they are loaded. All right? Because, you know, you teach kids how to treat certain things. You know, a kid might be holding a fake toy gun, and if you say to him, little Johnny, all guns are always loaded. Well, he might, if he's old enough, he's going to figure out, Come on, Dad. What are you talking about? This is a plastic gun. It's not loaded. So I like to reword it and say, treat all guns as if they are loaded. Because then, now, kids can understand that. Rule number two, never let the muzzle cover anything you are not willing to destroy. Or in other words, like I said earlier, don't point guns at people unless you want to destroy them. Rule three, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target or until you are ready to shoot or whatever. Keep the booger hook off the bang switch. Pretty much simple as that. And number four, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. And teach that those four to your kids and start at an early age. That's the way I think. I think if we do that, a couple of things happen. People realize that, oh, you know what? Mom and Dad are serious about gun safety. But more than that, you teach them. We have an education problem in this country. We have a firearms education problem, which I'm going to talk about coming up shortly right here on this episode. We have a firearms education problem in this country. And that's the biggest reason why we have so many people who want to try to ban guns. And so many people who just don't understand guns, which, again, I'm going to cover that here coming up shortly as soon as I get done with these voicemails. So, Jonathan, that's my answer. That's my take on it. Now, Jonathan has another voicemail that he called in on a different subject.
Bob, this is Jonathan from Central Pennsylvania once again calling back. Another subject matter here. I'm not new to shooting, not new to firearms, but I am new to handguns. And I'm looking to purchase my first handgun. And I'm seriously considering the Ruger SR9C. And I just wanted to see if you've ever shot that, what your thoughts are on the gun. There are a lot of good things about it. I know some people don't like the Ruger triggers, but from what I understand, the C version of the SR9, the trigger has been changed. I really like it. I think it has a very nice trigger. Of course, I don't have a lot of experience with shooting a lot of different handguns, but just wonder what your thoughts were on it. I've shot it. I like it. I also like the XDS in 9mm. But if you have any thoughts on that, or if anybody else has shot it, has it, owns it, and has any pluses or negatives about it, that would be good for somebody like me to know. It would be interesting for me to hear. All right, thank you very much. Bye.
The Ruger SR9C is a real good gun. I actually like the trigger. I think the triggers are excellent. Matter of fact, you know, most of you know I'm a big fan of Glock triggers. I think the Ruger SR9 or all the SR series of pistols have triggers just as good, if not even slightly better than Glocks. The only dislike I have of the Ruger series of pistols, as I've mentioned before, is the magazine disconnect safety. Now, I'm kind of confused because Ben Branham told me that Ruger is making versions of the SR series without a magazine disconnect safety. However, and recently, by the way, I was in a gun store in Houston, and I was dry firing a Ruger SR9C. And it seemed to me like it was firing without the magazine, but I'm not so sure if there's something in there blocking the firing pin or something. I actually called Ruger, and I asked one of the technicians at Ruger. I asked him, are you making any of the SR series pistols without a magazine disconnect safety? The Ruger rep told me no, that all of them had mag disconnect safety. So I don't know. If somebody can confirm, if you own a Ruger SR series pistol, and it fires without a magazine without a magazine in it, please let me know. I would like to know one way or the other. But that's my only dislike, and that's kind of a small thing if you ask me. Because the reason I don't like it is kind of a minor thing. I don't want, you know what, when I need a gun for self-defense, I don't want to leave anything to chance. I don't want any reason to occur to prevent that gun from firing. I don't want my brain to forget to disengage a manual safety. I don't want my brain to have a problem and for me to accidentally push the magazine release button or for it to get accidentally pushed in a fight and therefore the mag comes shooting out the bottom of the gun and now it won't fire. I don't want these... these devices that are made to idiot-proof guns. I don't think that we should idiot-proof guns. I think we need to fix the idiots who use guns, pretty much. But the problem is so many manufacturers put these idiot-proof devices on them. And guess what these devices do? All these devices do is prevent the gun from firing. Well, that's the last thing that you need if you really need to use your gun. If it's a life or death situation, you can't afford anything to prevent the gun from firing. Murphy's Law, what do we say? If something bad can go wrong, if something can go wrong, it will go wrong. So, but if you can live with that, then Jonathan, there's nothing wrong. It's a great buy. I saw a Ruger SR9 compact pistol at that Houston gun shop for $399. So, I mean, they're a great buy. For around $400, I think they're an excellent buy. They come with normal capacity magazines, which is what they should have. They seem like they're very well-built guns. And Ruger's a big major company that stands behind them. And they're very comfortable. They're very ergonomically friendly with very good triggers. So go for it, Jonathan. If, you know, if that's the gun you want, get it. I laid out my reasons why I don't own one yet. Now, if somebody can confirm this for me, if somebody can confirm that Ruger SR series pistols will fire, or that there's some of them out there that will fire without a magazine in it, I would like to know that. Please let me know, because then I actually might be willing to own a Ruger SR pistol. Call my voicemail, 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727, or go to handgunworld.com, scroll all the way down to the bottom. On the right, you'll see the Call Me button. Click that button, put in your phone number, and you'll get hooked up with my voicemail. All right. Before I get into the main topic, let's talk about the education problem. There's been a lot of talk about the recent Starbucks open letter that Howard Schultz put out there. And I haven't been saying much about it because I wanted to hear what other people were going to say about it first. I like to do that. I like to sit back, not render an opinion, hear what other people are saying, let some of the facts come out, analyze it for a while, and then I like to talk about it. So here's what I want to say. This is only going to take 2 minutes, and then we'll get right into the main topic. We have a problem in this country with people just flat out being uneducated about guns. And because today's society is not normally around guns, because people are not being raised today around guns, when they see guns and they're not gun people or they don't have much of an education, oh man, they freak out. They freak out. And the problem we have is we've got gun rights enthusiasts that are a little overzealous, and they're in the face of people who are uneducated about guns. So when these guys go to Starbucks and they open carry their AR-15s or their shotguns, they're throwing the gun rights battle right into the face of a bunch of uneducated people that don't know anything about guns, and they're scaring the sheeple. Now, you might be thinking, well, Bob, they're just sheeple, right? To heck with them. If they're scared, too bad. It's our constitutional Second Amendment right. Okay, yeah, I get that, and I agree with you. It is our constitutional right protected by the Second Amendment. That is true. But scaring the sheeple causes a problem. And here's the problem that scaring the sheeple causes. The sheeple pick up the phone, and they call 911, and they call the cops. And then there's a scene, okay? And then the cops have to do something. Okay, and then there's a big conflict between the open carriers and the cops, like we recently saw here in San Antonio, when these guys went into a Starbucks and sat out there in the outdoor sitting area with their AR-15s and their shotguns, and the cops come. And then what it does is the uneducated people see this stuff and they go, oh, look at those crazy gun people. Those crazy gun people, wow. You know, maybe we should have more restrictions on guns because those gun people are out of control. Look at them. They're scaring people. Maybe they really are irresponsible. And we don't want that to start to build. We don't want that wave of irresponsibility to start building. Okay. Am I saying that those guys that went to Starbucks are irresponsible? Well, no, that's not what I'm saying. But to the uneducated folks, it does look like they're irresponsible. And the last thing we want is this big wave of support for more gun control. And we don't want people starting to pressure their politicians for gun control. We don't want them to pressure the politicians to put more gun control in place. We want people to pressure their politicians to reduce gun control. All right? So think about what I just said there. It's not normally a good idea to scare the sheeple, to scare the uneducated, to frighten the people who really don't know what it is that they're looking at. They look at an AR-15. Ooh, that's scary looking. Okay? You and I listening to this podcast, we know that AR-15s are really not that scary of a gun. All they are is just a magazine-fed, semi-automatic rifle that holds an average of 30 rounds. That's you and I know that. And you can put a lot of cool stuff on them, and they're a modular gun and all that, and they're easy to shoot and don't have much recoil, and they're very accurate. But to the uneducated folks, and I'm talking about the uneducated, the low-information gun voters. Let's put it that way, okay? They're low-information gun voters. To them, an AR-15 looks like a scary gun. We've been winning this argument, and I love what Eric Shelton said recently when he sent a podcast over to Mark Vanderberg on the Gun Rights Advocates podcast. You got to listen to that. I think Eric nailed it. He nailed it, and he says, you know, the last thing that we want to do is to start this wave of people who think that we're irresponsible knuckleheads. So, Howard Schultz's letter was a request. It was not a ban on guns. He didn't say, I'm banning guns from all my stores and putting signs up. So far in Texas, I have not seen one 30-06 sign in a Starbucks. And I've been into four or five Starbucks stores since that letter came out. I haven't seen any no gun signs yet. Folks, we don't want no gun signs being put up. So please be smart about what you do when you protest for gun rights. I'm going to still carry my gun when I go to Starbucks, but it's concealed. It's concealed. I carry concealed. Nobody in that store will know if I'm carrying my gun, unless I have to use it when I'm in the store. And then if I'm justified in using it, well, then I don't care if they know I have it because I'm going to save my life with it. All right, that's pretty much what I wanted to say about the uneducated, low-information gun voters out there. So, let's move into legal talk. I recently had a chance to do a really good interview with Edwin and Michelle from Texas Law Shield. Texas Law Shield they're pretty much a competitor to Armed Citizens Legal Defense Network. Texas Law Shield, well, you know what? As a matter of fact, I'm not even going to tell you all about Texas Law Shield because that's what this interview is about. So, again, listen to some really good legal stuff, legal talk. And I don't get into that much in this show. So this was kind of a really pleasant surprise. Here we go. All right, well, on this episode, I've got two special guests. I've got Michelle and Edwin from Texas Law Shield. Welcome to the Handgun World Podcast.
Thank you.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. Introduce yourselves. Edwin, let's start with you.
Well, I'm Edwin Walker, and I founded the Texas Law Shield with a couple other law partners about 4 years ago. And we are a program that offers basically the financial security to folks that they know that they will be represented in the event that they ever find themselves where they've used their firearms in a way to defend themselves, their family, their property, etc. They will, if they're a member of the program, they will not have to worry about spending any additional money for attorney's fees to represent them through the entire process, whether criminal or civil.
Yeah, that's terrific. And I might ask you to get a little bit more detailed as we move along. Michelle, introduce yourself to the audience.
Yes, sir. I'm Michelle Byington. I'm one of the attorneys with Texas Law Shield. And I will be there in court with you if, God forbid, you have to use your firearm in a self-defense or defense of property, defense of third-party situation.
Well, that's good, because you kind of led me into the first question. Talk a little bit about Texas Law Shield's case history.
Well, there's a pretty good spectrum of cases that we've handled. Things down from a Class C misdemeanor, we've resolved that over the phone sometimes, all the way to ag assault felony charges that have gone to trial. We've definitely handled the spectrum of cases.
Oh, okay.
So here in Texas, there's about a half. If you pull out a gun, whether you use it or not, as in firing it, but under our program, the use of a gun includes the pulling it out to deter criminal activity as well. But if you have a gun and you act to pull it out, to display it, to show it, to shoot it, there are about a half a dozen different crimes you could potentially be charged with, all the way from Class C misdemeanor, discharging a firearm within the city limits, all the way, obviously, to aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and or murder. So that's what, not every time somebody pulls out a gun, number one, they don't get charged every time. But number two, even if they do get charged, many times it's for things like disorderly conduct, deadly conduct, possibly failure to conceal by a concealed handgun holder, that sort of thing. And so we represent folks in all those charges. A lot of times people call us after a use of force incident, and it is, we advise them, we tell them what to say to the police, what not to say. And most of the time, it does get resolved without charges being filed. But there certainly is still a high percentage of cases that charges do wind up getting filed. Then we have to go forward. We have to fight with those with the DA. Perhaps they get no-billed by the grand jury. Perhaps the DA has a change of heart and dismisses it somewhere down the line. So, and then ultimately there are those cases which will proceed to trial with a jury.
I have to say, though, the majority of our incidents that do get charges filed, after going to court several times, the prosecutor will see the light and see that our member was justified, or they were charged with a silly crime and they just can't meet the elements. So I'd say most of our members who do get charged will have to show up to court several times, but they don't actually see trial day because they get dismissed prior to trial.
And that's a good thing, and I'm glad both of you are addressing this, because I've been doing this show now for 4 years, and I get a lot of feedback from listeners that that seem to think that they're not going to have very many problems if they pull their gun. And Edwin, you just talked about, what did you say, like a half a dozen different crimes that they could be charged with?
Yes, exactly. And most states that we've done research into, they have very similar laws. And so a lot of people think, well, if I'm ever in that situation, I'm going to be fully justified, and I'm going to shoot the person, and I'm going to kill them, and there's only going to be one story. Well, that is a very, very small percentage of incidents that occur. Usually it will be an incident where somebody gets scared, and then the issue is whether or not they were justifiably scared. They get scared, they pull out their gun. The person backs off, but yet calls the police and says, "Hey, there's a crazy man waving his gun at me down at the Shell station." The police report. The police respond. They then have to tell their story about why they did it. The police will say, "Well, that's either a good reason or not a good reason," and then generally charge them with one of the firearm display crimes, which would be either disorderly conduct or deadly conduct.
Yeah. Now, Michelle, you said a couple things that I want you to elaborate on again. You said oftentimes they don't go to trial. Why is that?
Well, typically because our members are CHL holders and they're not out looking for fights. So when they do pull their weapon or they do discharge their firearm, they're fully justified in doing so. But you have to take that justification to a prosecutor. And keep in mind that a police officer's job when they arrive on the scene is not to determine whether our member was justified or not. They're there to investigate, collect evidence, and then pump that information onto a detective and then onto a district attorney. So when we show up to trial, we will explain why our member was justified. We'll go through the evidence, and this will take several, trial appearances. This will take several times to get the evidence in and whatnot. And then once everything is laid out on the table, Most prosecutors will kind of see the light and say, oh, okay, your guy was justified. Let's go ahead and dismiss this.
And also keep in mind, whenever the police are out there, the police are policemen. They're not lawyers. There's a surprise. We found a surprising, kind of a disconcerting number of policemen who don't even know all the elements of a particular given criminal offense.
Right.
And so without a lawyer present, in some of the big cities, police do have to clear arrest by the DAs first, who will then look at the case. But in a lot of smaller areas around the state and around the country, the police just simply make arrest when they believe they have probable cause. And then it's up to the DA to look at it to see if there even, in fact, was even a crime committed, because the police may forget about an element of crime, misinterpret an element of the crime, and whenever the DA looks at it and they look at the police report, then they'll realize, oh, geez, this wasn't even a crime at all. This person should have never been arrested in the first place.
And that's when Michelle comes in on our behalf.
That's correct, yes.
Yes. I'm there to save the day, yes.
Well, so talk about that. So, okay, let's say I'm a member of Texas Law Shield, and that unfortunate day comes that I never wished would come, but it comes, and somebody decides that they want to hurt or kill me, and it was a bad choice that they make, and I have to use my firearm in self-defense. What's the next step if I'm a member of Texas Law Shield or U.S. Law Shield?
Your next step is to call 911, and I believe Edwin briefly touched on this just a second ago. You call 911 to report the crime that was or is being committed against you. You don't call 911 to go, oh, I just drew my weapon, or hey, I just shot somebody. Because that puts you in a light of the bad guy, and we always want you to be in the light of the good guy. So when you call 911, couch it in terms that this guy just ran up and robbed me. I had to pull my weapon. Please get help out here. Tell them where you are, who, identify yourself and what you're wearing, so when the cops pull up, they can identify you as the good guy. Now get off the phone with 911 as soon as possible. Make up a stupid excuse, get off the phone, because everything is recorded on 911. And if it's being recorded, it can be used against you in court one day. So the less you say, the better. So get off 911 and then call our 24/7 attorney-answered emergency hotline. You will get a lawyer on the phone. You're not going to get a legal assistant. You're not going to get an answering service. You're going to get one of us on the phone. At that point, I want you to tell me everything that happened. I will then advise you, or Edwin will advise you, on what to tell the police and even what not to tell the police.
Really?
Because, oh, absolutely. Because when you're in this traumatic situation, if you just had to pull your weapon, you're going to be in shock. And there are several things the body goes through, and you're under no condition to be giving a detailed statement at that time. You're not going to have a calm, cool reflection, as they call it. You're going to be freaked out. So we recommend that we'll tell you what to say. We'll pick pieces out of your story on what we want you to say, and more importantly, what not to say if you're fuzzy on some details. Because what I don't want is someone to say, oh, he came through the door, and I pulled the trigger 3 times. Well, what if the police officer looks at the physical evidence, and it's clear he came through the front window, and you emptied a magazine on him, right? That statement does not line up with that physical evidence, even though you truly thought he came through the door, and you only shot 3 times. A prosecutor will use that against you and try to poke holes in your story. So it's best to say as little as possible if you're fuzzy on some details.
So you're going to advise me what to say and how to handle the whole situation once I call in.
Absolutely. And once you get off the phone with 911, call our 24/7 emergency hotline so I can advise you immediately before the police arrive.
Okay. Would it be wise at that point, after I've talked to you, to inform the police that I have legal representation?
Absolutely. If you don't feel comfortable talking to the police at all, you can invoke your right to remain silent and your right to counsel. And all questioning has to stop right then and there.
Okay. And then what? You'll meet me at the police station or something?
A lot of times, all of this can be handled over the phone. Okay. So if at 3 a.m., you're out in San Antonio, I'm out here in Houston, I can just be on the phone with you the entire time. If you want to go through with questioning, I can be on speakerphone and I can be like, Bob, don't answer that question. And then they'll have to stop.
Yeah, and a lot of times they won't take you into custody unless they believe that a felony has been committed or they have evidence against you. So what usually will happen, and if they do, they take you in, they will charge you, where at that time, if you're ever formally put under arrest, that's notice right then to just stop talking altogether, because the police officer's made a decision in his mind. He believes he has probable cause to arrest you, and at that point, you are not able, not you or your lawyer, are able to talk your way out of it. So at that point, you just shut up, because at the point he's arrested you, he's basically out of the picture and decided to turn everything over to the DA anyway. So if you're under arrest, we tell you don't say anything. We then, you know, hopefully we'll have your emergency contact information where we can get a hold of your family, get them to arrange to bond you out, get you bonded out, and then just deal with the court system, and the police are out of the picture entirely at that point. If the police say, well, we want to do some more investigation or what have you, then you're generally not put under arrest. And you go in and you either make arrangements, you know, we can make arrangements to go in and talk to the detective at a later time where we would be present, or sometimes they'll just say, fill out this affidavit and submit it, which then in that case, we obviously assist you in, getting the affidavit prepared.
Yeah, this is good. You know, Edwin, I've heard a lot of people say that it's not a wise idea to shut up, and I've heard some people say, well, say a little bit and then turn it over to your lawyer. When you say shut up, do you mean say absolutely nothing, or do you mean just say a limited amount of information?
Well, no. That's why you have to call us as soon as you call 911.
Okay.
Because you will, let's say that the person who did the shooting tells us a five-minute story. Obviously, there's a lot of details in a five-minute story. We will pare that down and say, look, all the cops need to hear is A, B, and C, and do not say anything more than A, B, and C.
I got you. Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Okay, good. This is an excellent service, because a lot of people that have CHLs, and of course for people in other states, that means concealed handgun license. It seems to be called different in all the different states. People that have a permit to carry, I think, don't necessarily think this through all the time. You know, they don't wonder what happens if I have to use my firearm in self-defense. And, you know, we all know about the high-profile case that was just recently tried earlier this year. And I think it's got a lot of people worried.
Oh, absolutely. And you're exactly right. I think the people I sat through my CHL class with really had no idea that of what will happen after you discharge your firearm, or after you have a moment that you have to defend yourself. Because when you use your gun, your journey is just getting started. And a lot of people do not realize that. And if your journey is started without Texas Law Shield, you may have a huge financial burden. And that was the premise of starting this program, is that people shouldn't go bankrupt paying attorneys to go to trial for them when they were absolutely justified in using force or deadly force.
Yeah, and in a minute I'm going to ask you to talk about the financial benefits, but I want to get your opinion on something. I like to tell people that there are really two fights that occur. There's the fight that you are in the fight for your life where you have to use your gun, and then there's the fight in court afterwards.
Yeah, that is the perfect way to put it.
You know, I'm a CHL instructor, and I've talked about that in my classes before, that, you know, you got more than just one fight. And so talk about the financial part of it. What are the financial benefits that a Texas Law Shield member gets?
Well, as far as the financial benefits, you have to look at the money that they're saving. They obviously have an attorney-client privilege already. They don't have to go out and look for an attorney. They don't have to come up with a, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 retainer. Because that's what the service is for, is that they have their attorney available to them, and they will, you know, they'll be confident that they will not receive a bill for any attorney's fees in the future.
Really? So if I'm involved in a shooting, I don't have to send Michelle a check for $5,000 for a retainer?
That's correct.
Wow. Okay, at what point? Really? So, at what point do I have to start paying fees?
You don't have to pay any fees to any lawyers. Okay, all lawyers' fees are taken care of. The only fees that and lawyers' expenses, quote unquote, are paid for as well. So you will not have to pay for meals, hotel rooms, copies, paralegals, phone calls, anything like that that people normally associate with a lawyer's expense. That's all taken care of as well. The only expense that the member would have to pay are expenses that are paid to third parties. We've had cases where it's been beneficial that the person takes a lie detector test, so then you have to pay for the polygraph examiner. We've had cases where it's been necessary for there to be a use of force expert, so they'd have to pay that. So any expenses payable to a third party, the client, the member, would be responsible for. But any expense that is incurred by the lawyer or the law firm, then that is what's taken care of.
Wow, that's a great deal. I didn't know that. So Texas Law Shield is how much per year?
Well, if you have a CHL, then the cost is $121 a year. I'm sorry, $131 a year. If you do not have a CHL, then the cost is $89 a year. Or if you choose to do it monthly, then it's a set price for both CHL and non-CHL at $10.95 a month.
Okay, $131 a year if you have a CHL.
Correct.
$89 if you do not have a CHL.
That is correct.
Or $10.95 a month.
That's correct.
Why is it less money if you do not have a CHL?
Well, because here in Texas, there is a limited number of places you can lawfully carry a firearm if you do not have a CHL.
I got you. Okay. Now, I follow you on that. Okay. Well, that's an incredible... that's an incredible deal, in my opinion. I mean, that sounds like that's a no-brainer.
Well, we think it's a pretty good idea. So there certainly is no other potential legal emergency that you can get a service like this for.
And I mean, not only is it a deal, you're getting attorneys that are staunch Second Amendment advocates. You're not getting an attorney who does divorces or civil litigation, on the side as well. You're getting attorneys who focus on gun rights, gun owners' rights, and issues arising out of that.
Well, and Michelle, and I assume that, you've got experience in the criminal defense of CHL holders, correct?
Plenty.
Yeah. So, you're getting attorneys that have experience in dealing with this sort of thing. Like you said, you're not getting a divorce lawyer or a tax lawyer or somebody like that.
That's exactly right. Yeah, we are here day in and day out for gun owners. We deal with the CHL side and also the non-CHL side. So the whole gambit is covered when it comes to guns.
Okay, there's a lot of people that are not from Texas listening to this show. So talk about the states that you cover outside of Texas and what someone would do to sign up for that.
Well, right now, so outside of Texas, we operate as U.S. Law Shield, and you can become a U.S. Law Shield member if you're a resident of Florida, Oklahoma, or Colorado at this point in time, and you get the exact same service that Texans do.
If you're a member of Florida, Oklahoma, and Colorado, you become a member of U.S. Law Shield.
Yes.
Okay, and that covers you when you're carrying in what states?
Well, there are two programs. One program is your home state only. And you can also sign up for the multi-state program, which will cover you in 13 additional states.
Right, which the multi-state program includes states where we already have prearranged agreements with lawyers in that state to represent our members. We don't offer the plan in those states, but we do already have lawyers in that state.
And they're lawyers like you that are experienced with criminal defense, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Why we're only available, our multi-state is only available in 13 states, is because we highly vet these attorneys.
Yeah. Well, and that's good. Can you tell us what states those are?
Yeah. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
It's Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Indiana, Louisiana, Mississippi, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Virginia. And, of course, Texas.
That covers about 95% of where I travel.
Good.
And, all right, so if someone's in Texas, they can become a member of U.S. Law Shield and the multi-state. And if they're in Florida, Oklahoma, or Colorado, they can do the same thing.
Correct.
Okay. What about somebody like up in Wisconsin right now? Do you have any plans to offer them something in the future?
Yeah, it's definitely our goal is to get nationwide so we can protect everybody across the country. It just takes time to get there.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and the key is that in order to do this properly, we have to make sure that it's basically doing it in accordance with the business laws of that particular state. So it doesn't have anything to do with the state's gun laws or self-defense laws or anything like that. It's just simply a matter of doing it right and making sure that the proper business such structure is set up in that state.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Michelle, when I met you at the shooting range the other day, I think I mentioned I wanted you to talk about this. I know you can't give details for privacy reasons, but as much as you can, you got any horror stories you can share?
Full of horror stories. My favorite one, I guess it's terrible to say this is my favorite one, but a gentleman was driving to work on a Monday morning. He was going a little past the speed limit. He was pulled over by a police officer for speeding. He was a non-CHL holder, and the police officer comes up to the window, and our member just tells him, "Hey, I just want to let you know I have a firearm in the glove box." And the police officer just absolutely freaked out. Tells our guy to get out of the car and asks him, wonder what authority does he think he can have a firearm? And of course, even without a CHL, you may keep a handgun as long as it's concealed in your car.
In the state of Texas, yes.
Correct. In the state of Texas, yes, I should preface that. In Texas, you can have a concealed handgun in your vehicle with or without a CHL. So our guy ends up getting placed in the back of a squad car, and he was not handcuffed, so he was able to call the 24/7 emergency hotline, and he called me frantic that he had just been placed in the back of this squad car. It was because he had a firearm. He didn't think he was doing anything wrong, and I was like, oh, you're absolutely right. You are fully within your rights to have your firearm in that location. Well, he's like, well, can you tell the police officer that? Of course, the police officer doesn't want to talk to an attorney because, well, for the obvious reasons.
Right.
But then I overhear the police officer, he's on the phone with a supervisor, and this officer goes, what? Are you sure? When did that law change?
Huh?
And so apparently his supervisor had to let him know that non-CHL holders could now keep their firearm in their car. And so our guy was let go, and upon the ending of this, terrible encounter that our member had, the police officer goes, well, I guess it's a good day when you learn something new, and let our guy go. But that's just one of the small examples. It's a non-self-defense example that we give, because we do, anything dealing with guns, we want to help. And, of course, we want to educate our citizens and police officers as well when it comes to gun rights.
Yeah, now I want everybody listening to know that we're not trying to bash cops on this episode. We're just simply talking about things that can happen. And, let's face it, there are police officers that just don't know all the laws pertaining to firearms.
Well, and I found out recently that they don't teach that in the police academy. So it's not their fault. They're just doing, their job to the best of their capability, and some of these nuanced laws just aren't getting taught in the police academy. So we've really tried to make it an effort to make sure our members are protected.
Okay.
Yes. For example, we had another member who was arrested here in Texas. It is perfectly legal for you to carry an unconcealed firearm if you're on your own property. And we've had a couple of times, one person actually was arrested, a couple of other people have been, talked to or lectured by the police because they were in their own yard with a pistol on their belt. And like I said, we had one guy who was actually arrested. The police was accusing him of disorderly conduct because he had a pistol on his own property. And, of course, the DA, fortunately, this was entirely caught on videotape because the police officer was less than honest in his written report and made it look like our guy was violating the law. Fortunately, there was a dash cam video which showed the whole thing, and the DA's office immediately dismissed the case upon seeing the videotape. And so not only are there a lot of police officers who don't know the law, but there are those unfortunate bad apples who will actually try to color anything they can just so they can solely support that their arrest was justified.
So the man was arrested on his own property?
Yes, he was.
Unbelievable.
So he was arrested, spent the night in jail, had to bond out, and fortunately he had our service, so he didn't have to pay anything for a lawyer's fee.
I don't think he's going to get his bond money back.
Well, I think he paid cash bond, and he would get that back. But yeah, if you paid a bail bondsman, then yeah, that bail bonds fee goes to the bail bondsman.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Well, okay, so there's a couple of good stories right there and benefits. I mean, even the two that you just pointed out, to me that's worth $131 a year.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, even just having to call an attorney to go to court with you a couple of times would have cost a couple thousand dollars.
How much is the multi-state membership?
I believe it is $295 extra a month.
Or what if they pay? Yes. What if paying by a year?
$35.40 per year.
An extra $35.40.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And all this, and everybody can sign up by going to TexasLawShield.com, right?
That is correct.
Or I'm on it right now, or USLawShield.com.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, I've asked all the questions that I want to ask. This is good stuff here. But I'm going to give you guys the open floor. I mean, it's the rest of this time's all yours. Talk about anything you've got going, or if you want to talk about more stories or benefits that you guys offer, go for it.
Yeah, well, when you become a member, you're going to get a member ID card. And on the back of that member ID card, there are two phone numbers. One of those phone numbers is the emergency hotline number. And so whenever you find yourself, God forbid, in one of these incidents, that is the phone number we want you to call after you call 911. That number will get you straight to an attorney so we can advise you on what to do next. And then, of course, we will take care and walk you through any police investigations. We'll go make a court appearances with you. If we got to go through a criminal trial, we'll do that. And if you're charged with a felony, we'll prep you for the grand jury as well. So what if it's not done yet and the family or the person that you shot sues you for civil damages? Well, we also take care of that. So when they come back and want money for medical bills or lost wages, we will also represent you in the civil trial as well.
I was going to ask that about the civil trial. Okay, so you do represent them. Good.
Yes. I mean, we are start to finish legal services here. I mean, there is no rock left unturned.
Which is still all included in the members' fees except for third-party expenses, as Edwin pointed out.
Yes. Oh, yeah. All of this you get for your $10.95 a month or your annual payment. And, you will never pay Texas Law Shield another dime. It'll all go to a third party.
Yeah, and also with regard to civil matters, we will work in conjunction because a lot of times the only reason people sue people civilly is to get at their insurance policy. Because most people, for better or worse, they're what we call judgment proof. And so we have a case right now where the member used their gun on the man who had come into her house. It turned out to be a mistake as to why he came in the house. She was not charged with shooting him, but he has now filed a civil claim against her and against her homeowner's insurance policy, more particular, claiming that she was negligent in shooting the gun off. Now, she was intentional in shooting the gun off, and most insurance policies don't cover intentional acts. So the insurance company is still looking into it. We're working with the insurance company. So basically, because as we all know, insurance companies, they look out for their own best interest. We always look out for the best interest of the member. And so basically, we are her lawyer working in conjunction with her insurance company to make sure that this guy doesn't get paid a penny.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's good. The start to finish, I really like that. And, you know, you're helping people with the fight after the fight, as I call it, the fight in the legal system.
Absolutely. I want to just take that little, you know, that stress away of the financial burden and know that they're in, you know, good hands, and we're taking care of them and we're zealous advocates for them.
Edwin, you mentioned earlier in the interview, we were talking about if somebody pulls their gun or brandishes it, whatever you want to call it, and they get charged with a crime in that situation, you're there to represent them if that happens as well, right?
Well, yes. That's why in our contract we talk about the use of a gun. And the use of a gun includes basically, you know, if you are unjustly accused of carrying it in a means that you were lawfully carrying it, such as the man who had the gun in his own front yard. It also includes uses that are used to thwart crime, you know, whether it's just simply pulling your shirt back and showing you have a gun, actually pulling it and pointing at another person, or actually discharging the weapon. All of those are considered to be uses, and all of them are justified under the Texas Penal Code for, you know, basically as a, you know, as a defense to the use of force or deadly force against you, or the use of force against, or deadly force against particular crimes.
Yeah, I get several phone calls from members who say, well, I didn't shoot my gun, so I don't know if this is covered. And they're absolutely covered. It's any sort of use and display. You just lifting your shirt up to show you got one on your waistband all the way through the discharge. We'll take care of it all.
You know, and it also includes defense of yourself or others against animals. We've had tons of cases where people have shot dogs. Apparently, there's a rash of dog attacks here in Texas. And so, yeah, if you shoot a dog and you did it in self-defense, then that's also a covered incident. We had a guy who shot a skunk who was attacking his dog. And the police came out and wrote him a ticket for discharging a firearm in the city limits. And that was covered. And so, you know, we don't want to sound like it's limited to just anytime you shoot a guy committing a home invasion. It occurs, you know, whenever you use that firearm in defense of yourself, your others, or your property. And in fact, what we've seen is that most incidences that occur do in fact occur outside the home. You know, home invasions are, you know, they are somewhat limited. And that's why our program is not limited to just home invasions. We protect you when you're out at the park walking your dog. We protect you whenever you're, you know, walking through the theater parking lot. We protect you when you're at the Walmart. We protect you whenever you're at your business. You know, anytime you have your gun and you use it, you are engaging in a covered event where we represent you.
Okay, good. Edwin, I want you to clear something up. First of all, I'm glad you talked about those benefits you just did. A couple minutes ago, you said something about even if a person shows their gun or displays it. I teach in my CHL classes not to do that unless you intend to use it.
Well, that I, you know, I don't know. I know a lot of CHL instructors do that. However, Texas law specifically allows you to display your gun in a use of force, not deadly force, if you are doing it for the sole purpose to notify the other person that you will use deadly force if necessary.
Really? That's yeah. Texas law allows that?
Texas Penal Code Section 9.04, yes.
Section
9.04.
I did not know that because I advise my students not to do that. But, okay, so I learned something.
Yeah, so basically that they specifically wrote that provision for situations like, let's say, you're at the gas station. It's late at night, you're pumping gas, some guy walks up to you, he looks kind of like a derelict, he's you know, big, dangerously, he's got crazy look in his eye, comes up to you and he says, hey man, give me $5. Okay, well, is that a robbery? Is that a request? Is he just asking for money? Is he not? And you say, you know, give me $5. Well, I think at that point you can justifiably articulate that you have it, that a reasonable person would fear that there is some crime that's fixing to occur. Okay?
Okay.
Now, do you have to wait until he gets within 3 feet of you and pulls out a screwdriver and tries to stab you with it before you can pull your gun out? I would argue that at that point, it's too late. You've already got a screwdriver in your head. All right? So, but if he's still 10 feet away and is continuing to walk towards you, you can say, hey, look, sir, get back. I don't want any trouble. And at that point, be in reasonable fear that this person is fixing to use force against you so that you can pull out your gun and potentially scare him off. Because that's what that law is for, is to scare people off and not let them get in a situation where it's now a life or death situation. So now, after that happens, again, what we advise is that you call 911. You say, hey, I was just at the Shell station. This guy tried to rob me. You know, he came up within just a few feet of me. He demanded $5. I thought I was in fear. I want to make a report of it. Because you don't want him running down the street saying, hey, some crazy guy at the Shell station just pointed his gun at me for no reason. You want to make sure that you get that reason out there in case this blows up.
Okay. So, yeah, and I just looked it up while you were talking. So Texas Penal Code 9.04, you're right. The threat of force is justified when the use of force is justified. But okay, I got you. So that threat is justified when you can articulate that you're reasonably in fear of serious bodily injury.
Oh, no, just a bodily injury, because you don't have to let it get to the point, like I said, where it's a life or death situation. Now, it does have to be a life or death situation whenever you actually pull the trigger.
Okay. All right. Okay. So,
If you're still in that gray area where you're like, okay, I think he might hurt me, but maybe he won't kill me, then you can still show your gun. So if you're afraid somebody's going to punch you in the face, that's a use of force. You can show your gun to keep them from punching you in the face.
Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
If they then pull out a deadly weapon and threaten you with that, now you are to the point where you could actually pull it out and pull the trigger.
Yeah, now I want to be clear, because I know what some people are thinking. You know, if your brother-in-law pisses you off by something he says, you can't show him your gun.
That is correct. There has to be more than just the mere verbal threat against you.
Yeah.
And that can include their physical presence. That can include them having their fist balled up. That could include them pulling their fist back to swing at you. So, yeah, you cannot use force or deadly force in response to verbal provocation alone. However, verbal provocation coupled with other physical acts that put a reasonable person in fear, then, yes, you can use force or deadly force to defend yourself.
Now, I want to make it clear to people who don't live in Texas. We're talking about Texas law right now. They need to know the laws in their own state.
That's correct. Now, some states do have laws very, very similar to Texas. Some states do not.
Edwin, if somebody is a member from Florida, Colorado, or I think you said Oklahoma, right?
Yes, Oklahoma.
Okay. Or if they're a member of Texas and they've signed up for the U.S. Law Shield coverage, can they call an attorney and say, hey, look, I'm traveling to Arkansas, and I want to know what the laws are regarding the use of force in Arkansas?
Yes, and that's one of the chief benefits of our program over, you know, programs that may be trying to compete with us, is that, you know, everybody thinks about, oh, I need this in case I use my gun. However, we provide as much education as we do legal representation. And that's also one of the chief benefits of our program, is that you know that if you have a question, that you have a lawyer available to answer it for you for no charge. So it's like having a best friend that's a lawyer and saying, hey, what are the laws of self-defense? Or where can I carry or where can I not carry? Or here in Texas, a particular concern is, our no trespassing signs, or what we commonly call 30-06 signs. So we'll have a member that's getting ready to go into a restaurant. They see a no gun sign. They get a little weirded out. They call us and say, hey, look, I'm at this restaurant. They have a no gun sign. Does that mean I can't carry my concealed carry gun in there? And so we provide a lot of legal advice and a lot of legal education that is part of the member's membership.
And I see you have a non-emergency phone number. That's what that would be for, right?
That That's exactly right. When I spoke of those two phone numbers on the back of the card, you got one, your emergency hotline, and then two is the business line, where a member can call any time with their legal questions. But on top of our legal questions, we also send out newsletters. We just sent out a big Texas legislative update for all of the laws that have changed starting September 1 relating to guns. So we will send out monthly newsletters on different topics that interest people and issues that are arising relating to guns.
Okay. Yeah, this is good stuff. I think the small fee that you guys charge, that's a no-brainer. I mean, $11 a month, come on. I know that there's a lot of people listening to this podcast that spend 10 times that in ammo or 5 times that amount in ammo every month.
Oh, easy.
You know, so I think it's this is protection that people have to have. And, you know, you differentiated yourself against some of your competitors. If you want to go ahead and talk about some of the differences between your organization and competitors, feel free to do that.
Well, some of our competitors operate more like an insurance company, a reimbursement program. You'll have to go out and find your own lawyer, or they'll give you a list of lawyers for you to call. The lawyer will then charge you. You'll need to pay the lawyer, and then you'll present, I guess, to the company on why they should reimburse you for the attorney. So you have to deal with the expense up front, which a lot of people don't have. We're absolutely opposite of that. When you call, you have your attorney. You don't have to go find one. Your membership cost takes care of all of your attorney's fees. There's no reimbursement. There's no any of that. And we will really, really try hard to find any reason to represent you. We're not like an insurance company. We're going to try. We're going to try to fight for you no matter what.
And we're the only program that I am aware of that is run by lawyers, has lawyers on staff.
That's the emergency hotline going off right now that Edwin's taking.
Yeah, that's good.
Go ahead.
That's the emergency hotline going off. That's good. He better take that call.
He just ran out, so now you just got me.
That's fine. Go ahead.
you got lawyers on staff. This is a lawyer-based company, and we're just for staunch Second Amendment supporters. We're not just plain Jane criminal defense attorneys.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's interesting that Edwin had to go out and answer the hotline. You know, I mean, I couldn't have planned it any better. I'd rather be lucky than good. Here I am doing a podcast, and you guys are talking about the emergency hotline, and it goes off while we're talking about it. That's great. That's great. You talk about a stroke of luck. That's good. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, Michelle, if you can answer this question. Just in the state of Texas alone, how many lawyers do you have?
Well, we have five here in Houston that are full-time Texas Law Shield attorneys, and then we have a network of local counsel all over the state. So since I'm in Houston, we had to get somebody out in El Paso to take care of our members who could get there faster than, you know, me or Edwin.
Okay, so I'm in San Antonio, so if I needed to have in-person representation, I probably wouldn't get you, but I'd get one of your network attorneys.
Correct. We got a San Antonio guy.
Okay. All right. Very good. This is good stuff. I'm glad you guys came on to talk about it, because I had a lot of questions which you've already answered, and a couple of listeners submitted questions. So I appreciate your time.
No, thank you for having us. I surely enjoyed it.
Yeah. Tell Edwin, I hope that emergency line call goes well, and tell him thank you very much for his time.
Absolutely.
And, this is great. Thank you very much. Oh, where can people, if people have more questions, yeah, how could I forget this? If people have more questions, how do you suggest that they get a hold of you or your organization?
Well, you can always call us anytime. Our number is 877-448-6839. I'll give that to you one more time. It's 877-448-6839. And, of course, check out our website, texaslawshield.com or uslawshield.com, for any other information.
Yeah, and I'll put links in the show notes. I'll put that phone number in the show notes, and I'll put direct links to your website in the show notes. Michelle, thanks very much. Please extend my thanks to Edwin.
You got it.
I appreciate that. You have a good day. Shoot straight and shoot safe, okay?
You got it, bud. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
All right.
Wow, isn't that good stuff? Many thanks to Edwin and Michelle. Check out Texas Law Shield, folks. I'm not a member right now. I think I'm going to become a member real soon. Very, very good stuff. Once again, they donated their time. Show them some love. Go over to their website, texaslawshield.com, uslawshield.com, or Google those. And once again, as I always mention, show notes will contain links. There will be links in the show notes for both of their website. I did forget one voicemail, so we're going to put Dan on here from Pennsylvania pretty soon. Well, actually, let's go ahead. I got a few closing comments after we listen to Dan in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Bob. Dan Vamos here with a comment and a plea for help / question. First of all, I just heard the episode on don't bring a knife to a gunfight, and I wanted to respond to that. When you said don't bring a knife to a gunfight, or maybe you, let me put it this way. However it was stated, I think someone's missing the point here, the gentleman from Utah. When you say it's okay to bring a knife to a gunfight, you're not saying to leave your gun at home. The more tools you have, the better you are at having a response to a threat. And the second thing I would say along with that is, it's not even really talking about handguns and a gunfight. You know, the saying is actually more metaphorical, and it's more about whatever the conflict is, have a response requisite or comparable or adequate to the threat. And so, obviously, if, you know, you're talking about some kind of an argument in court, you don't bring a gun, you bring enough evidence to defend yourself or to make your case. So I don't even think you necessarily have to take it so literally. I think that's kind of silly how some people are doing that. Second of all, if I have a gun at a gunfight, I still want to have a knife. Mom didn't tell you when you were little, you know, to, you know, wear clean underwear and wear clothes every day. She just assumed at some point you figured that out. Those of us that have guns, you're not telling us to leave our guns at home. You're telling us in addition to, hey, it might be a good idea to have a gun, or a knife. It might come in handy. So just along those lines, I just wanted to share that. Maybe a different way of looking at the threat, but I don't think you ever told people to leave your guns at home and walk around with a knife. That you never said that. And the second thing is, Bob, I recently took my wife to the gun range, tried out my Glock 17, and I noticed it was weakly ejecting. And before I could stop her, one of the rounds bounced off her head. She wasn't wearing a hat, but she was wearing safety glasses, ricocheted off her forehead, somehow got down by the corner of her eye where the frame meets the glass, got behind her eye and burned her. She now has a live Glock, 9mm, and she luckily was under control of her emotions and could put the gun down, but it was a dangerous situation. I called Glock, and they said, well, they didn't really want to admit to anything. The gentleman I spoke with at the company wasn't very polite, and said, well, you know, send it in, and we'll take a look at it. Well, the way they needed return to Glock involved a $90 freight charge from FedEx by the special way that they have to have the gun shipped back to them. And so I don't want to spend $90 just to have some technician take a look at something. My question to you, Bob, is there something that I can do? Is there a way to get some kind of a recourse or to fix the problem? I mean, I'm probably going to just do it myself. I, you know, bought the replacement ejector piece from Lone Wolf, but it just seems that Glock's not standing behind their product. And, you know, I went on forums and noticed that this is a common occurrence, or at least is spoken about very much about a weak ejector extractor. I'm not even sure what exactly it's called. But, you know, I'm pretty hopping out about it, that it's a faulty thing, and Glock's not really standing behind it. And, you know, I've really had my confidence shaken in Glock and not standing behind this product and making it so difficult to have a repair done and them stand behind their work when, obviously, this is a problem that's well known on the forums. And the reason why I'm just calling is, you know, I'm not a gun guy, so to speak. Can you give me some advice on how to handle the situation or what to do? You know, thank God my wife has sight in both her eyes still. As a doctor, she would have, without depth perception, that would have really damaged her career. And I can't even get Glock to take a look at my gun without me, you know, spending $90 to ship it back through FedEx this very special way that, you know, instead of them, you know, returning it for me free of charge and standing behind their product. So if you could give any ideas, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thanks, Bob. Bye.
Dan, first of all, I want to mention this. The shipping method that you use when you ship a handgun to a manufacturer or to an FFL, those shipping requirements are not set by the firearms manufacturer. Those are set by the carrier. Those are set by UPS or FedEx or whatever carrier you use to ship the gun. They're really not even, some people think it's a law that you have to overnight a handgun. No, it's not. It's set by the carrier. Now, there are some restrictions, like, I'm not real sure, but there's some restrictions about sending guns or gun parts through the post office. I'm not sure if that's actually really legal or not, or maybe only FFLs can do it. I'm not sure, okay, because I don't really do a whole lot of shipping guns. If somebody can clear that up, then send me an email or a voicemail. But I do know when it comes to UPS or FedEx, those requirements, Dan, they're set by the carrier. So it's not Glock that's telling you that you have to ship it that way. It's the carriers. And sometimes, yes, it can be expensive. Now, with regards to the poor service, here's what I would do, okay? I'd call Glock back and ask to speak to a supervisor. I mean, that's not right if someone's rude to you. And really, I think that they really should pick up the shipping. Although, you know, I gotta tell you, if they picked up the shipping for everybody that ever sent a pistol back, that can amount to a lot of money. So you have to understand why they would be somewhat hesitant about it. Folks, I work for a product manufacturer, okay? Not a firearms manufacturer, but I do work for a product manufacturer. And I know what kind of costs that there are. Now, your problem with the casings, it sounds like it might be an ejector issue. Your ejector, not necessarily the extractor, but the ejector, is probably what's the problem going on there. It might be an extractor that's out of tune, or maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe it's an extractor and an ejector, but that's what it sounds like. So I think if you do some tuning of the extractor or replacing, get a hold of a Glock armorer. That might help you, Dan. Find a Glock armorer near you and see if he or she knows what the scoop is. Besides that, a Glock armorer might be able to call Glock on your behalf and get better results, too. Think about that, if they're a certified Glock armorer. Okay, and some of you listening to this show, I know you're a Glock armorer. So if you got some advice for Dan, please call it in. Okay. To close the show, here's some of the comments that I want to talk about. In the future, we have some classes coming up. Now, continue to listen through the rest of the show here because I got some pretty cool stuff to announce. First of all is a night shoot, a low-light night fighting gun class that Ben and I are teaching. We got the authority from one of our ranges that we use to teach a night shooting class, a combat night shooting low light class. We're going to start the class at 4:00 in the afternoon, and we're going to go till 10:00. Okay, so we're going to have a couple of hours of good daylight, and it's going to be really cool. It's not going to be till November 16th. So even here in San Antonio on November 16th, in the middle of November, it'll start getting dark early enough. We're going to be able to get at least 2 hours and maybe even 2.5 to 3 hours of low light or nighttime shooting. And here's why I'm so excited about this. Everybody practices in the daytime. But we all know that it's quite likely you're going to need your gun in a low light situation. If your house is dark or if you're in a low-lit area outside of your house, it's a whole different ball game shooting at night. So come join us. It's only $150. If you go to handgunworld.com, take a look at the menu. You'll see all the classes that we have listed, and it's going to be pretty cool. Also, we have a two-day event, a two-day pistol and rifle course. 2 days. The first day is going to be pistol, and the second day is going to be rifle. pistol fighting dynamics and rifle fighting dynamics. You can come to just one of the days if you want. If you don't want to come to both, it's a Saturday and Sunday class. If you don't want to come to both, if you can only make it to one or only afford one, by all means, there. Go ahead and go to that page on my website, and there is a selection there for one day or both days. You do save a lot of money if you come to both days. So check that out. Go to handgunworld.com. Those two and the rifle class we have coming up October 12th, that's pretty much all we've got planned for the rest of the year. And folks, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to train next year. Instruct. I'm going to be able to do some teaching, but I don't know how much. A lot of it depends on my wife's health situation and what next year brings. We just don't know. There's a lot of uncertainties. So I don't know how much time I'm going to be able to spend away from home out there teaching. I will know more probably in November or December, but I can tell you that I'm not going to be able to teach as many classes next year as I did this year. So if you want to train with me, if you want to, you know, some of you have been quite flattering saying that you wanted to take a class that I teach, do it now. Do whatever you have to do to get to San Antonio between now and the end of the year to take one of our classes. If you're within a reasonable distance, if you're in North Texas, if you're in Louisiana, if you're in Arkansas, you know, or if you're anywhere in South or Central Texas, get to the class, do whatever you can. It's not that hard, but I don't know what the schedule is going to be like for Ben and myself next year, okay? So, and again, I'm not just saying that to put a sales pitch on you. It's the truth. With all that said, folks, thanks for listening to the 250th episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Catch you next week. Bye.